The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the April issue of The Ultimate Guide to Almost Everything, Popular Science for Kids. We're going to begin on page 58. And the question we're asking, how was the Freedom Tower built? The Twin Towers of the World Trade Center collapsed after being attacked on September 11, 2001. Undaunted, New York City moved to put up a new and even bigger building. On the site of the disaster rose a monument to Progress, Freedom Tower, and One World Trade Center. Standing gleaming and tall at exactly 1,776 feet, which matches the year of America's independence. Of course, including the skinny spire at the top, Freedom Tower is the tallest building in the Western Hemisphere. How did this amazing creation rise up? Work began in 2006, and it took more than 8 years and the hard work of thousands of experts to finish. Planning engineers used types of concrete and steel in new ways. The foundation was dug out. Exterior special glass was used to cover the outside. Not only does it reflect sunlight for a rainbow effect, it also helps keep the inside a pleasant temperature. The building won award for being eco-friendly. Design 1WTC's design is geometric. The base is a cube with 8 tall triangles rising from it. At the center, the tower forms a perfect octagon. Framing. With cranes built by other cranes, workers added a massive steel skeleton floor by floor. As beams went into place, concrete flooring was poured. The concrete was the hardest ever used in a New York City building. Interior, thousands of people now work in one World Trade Center. Offices were rented and interior walls and rooms were built. Furniture was loaded in. The Twin Towers at WTC prior to 9/11. Dedication. On November 3, 2014, Freedom Tower was officially opened. Visitors to the observatory at the top of the building can enjoy a 360-degree view. World's tallest buildings. Skyscrapers were once thought to be massive at 10 to 20 stories high. But today's soaring towers, like the ones here, easily stretch past 120 floors or more. Number 1. Burj Khalifa at Dubai, 2,717 feet. Shanghai Tower, Shanghai, China, 2,073 feet. Number 3, Mecca Royal Clock Tower in Mecca, Saudi Arabia, 1,972 feet. Ping An Finance Center, Shenzhen, China, 1,965 feet. And Lotte World Tower, Seoul, South Korea, 1,819 feet. 6 more fascinating facts. Why do trees in Singapore have an on-off switches? Because they are made by humans. The enormous light trees in the Super Tree Grove tower over a park. Made of skeletons of steel, the trees are lit using solar power and grids of colored lights. A walkway among the 164-foot structures lets people look down on a huge botanical garden. Where can fish ride in a car? A tropical reef fish can get behind the wheel of this car. A sculpture at the Museo Subacquatico de Arte. This underwater art museum is located off the coast of Mexico. To see the sunken artwork up close, visitors can snorkel, take a glass-bottom boat, or suit up with scuba gear. The artwork also helps build up the reef system and provides a habitat for marine life. Would you brave the Zangezi Bridge Did we mention it's made of transparent glass and that it's more than 980 feet above the ground? The thick glass bridge connects two mountaintops in Hunan Province, China. It's 19.6 feet wide, and yes, there is a high guardrail. Still, as you walk, you can look straight down past your feet to the green forest below. Yikes! Where is the hottest place people live? Most weather experts point to the Saudi Arabian city of Mecca. During the height of summer, temperatures can rise to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. It's more than 87 degrees Fahrenheit all year long. By comparison, the highest average annual temperature in the United States is 78.5 degrees Fahrenheit in Marathon, Florida. What is the world's largest mud building? Built on the site of an older building in 1905, the Grand Mosque in Djenne, Mali, is constructed entirely of mud and wood. And more than 320 feet long and 131 feet wide, it includes two huge towers. Every year, the locals add a new layer of mud on the outside to protect it. How did palm trees grow in the waters of the Persian Gulf? The city of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates wanted more beachfront property, so they built some. Engineers designed enormous earthworks in the shape of palm trees and built them into the coastal waters of the Persian Gulf of Dubai. Houses, resorts, hotels, and more were built on the islands. Another nearby development was created with islands in the shape of a world map. Chapter 4. Cool Tech. Here, technology is all about science being put to work. Turn the page to see some of the many ways we're using it today. Electric cars can often have more compact motors than gasoline-powered vehicles. Henry Ford in his first gasoline-powered car, the Ford Quadricycle, in 1896. Good thinking, Henry. We've come a long way. What is navigation? Navigation is the process of planning and following a route from one place to another. When you decide which streets to take while walking to school, that's navigation. When your bus driver decides which student to drop off first, that's navigation too. And if you drive somewhere new, most cars have access to a global positioning system, GPS, that navigates for you, and if your car doesn't have it, your phone does. But navigation hasn't always been so easy. Many of history's greatest navigational tools were created by and for sailors. On the open seas, there are no real landmarks. But even sailors in the ancient world understood that they could calculate direction and distance by observing their physical relationship to either the sun during the day or the stars at night. Ancient sailors looked to the sky to determine their location. GPS also looks to the sky, using satellites in space to map your route. The difference is that GPS is nearly completely accurate in determining a location anywhere on Earth, a vast improvement over any tool that came before it. Map, first used in 700 BC and likely earlier. Historians suspect that maps have existed in some form since the very first humans tried to remember how to get from one cave to another. But the oldest surviving map is the Imga Mundi. It was carved into a clay tablet, and it showed the world as ancient Babylonians believed it looked. Astrolabe, first used around the 6th century. Ancient navigators used the position of stars to plot their routes. An astrolabe, Greek for star taker, was a tool that assisted with calculating distances between the sun, the stars, and the horizon, the line at which the earth and the sky appeared to meet. Kemal, first used around the 10th century. The Kemal is a simple but effective navigational tool invented by Arab sailors. It's a rectangle of wood with a string attached. And the string has a series of knots tied to it. The navigator would hold out the kamal, creating an angle between the device and the North Star. To keep their boat headed in a straight line, sailors just had to make sure that the angle between the star and the kamal remained the same. Compass, first used around the 11th century. The magnetized needle inside a compass always points north because it's responding to the magnetic field of Earth. The first compasses were used by Chinese navigators about 1,000 years ago. Europeans developed their own compasses around 1200. Crossstaff, first used for 14th century. A medieval scholar named Levi Ben Gerson pioneered a tool called the crossstaff. As a sailor's navigational tool, crossstaffs became popular among Portuguese explorers in the early 1500s. They used the crossstaff to measure the angle of the sun as it relates to the horizon. Knowing this can help determine latitude. Sextant, first used mid-18th century. Much like a crossstaff, a sextant measures angles in relation to the sun and the horizon. But a sextant is much more precise than a crossstaff, and can measure both latitude and longitude. Also, it has a pair of mirrors inside, which means that the user does not need to look directly at the sun, the way the user of a crossstaff might. Satellite navigation. First commercial use, 1996. There are 31 satellites in orbit called the Global Positioning System. They work for emitting signals about their location to receivers, like the one in your phone. Receivers take the info from a number of satellites and use that data to figure out location. Page 66. Still on tech, how do suspension bridges work? Suspension bridges depend on two forces, tension and compression. Tension is the force that tries to stretch things or pull them apart. Imagine a game of tug of war. The rope is under tension because the people on both sides are pulling on it. Compression pushes in, trying to squash something into itself. On a suspension bridge, the cables experience tension, and the two towers and the end of the bridge experience compression. This balance of two opposing forces enables suspension bridges to withstand the pressure of a third force, gravity, which is always trying to pull bridges and everything else down. With a well-constructed suspension bridge, the weight of the deck where the road is located is transferred from cables to the towers, which overcome the force of gravity. And see, we see a picture here on the bottom of page 66. Suspenders under tension, cables under tension in the deck, the Brooklyn Bridge, Golden Gate, Gate Bridge, towers, piers, anchorages. 5, page 67. What are some other types of bridges? Steps to build a bridge. 1. A foundation, or pier, is built on either side to provide support. They're usually made from caissons, a French word meaning boxes filled with concrete. 2, the two towers are built. Concrete caissons form the foundations. 3, anchorages are placed at each end of the bridge. These will hold the ends of the cables and transfer the tension of the bridge into the piers. 4, cables are made from steel wires that are spun using a pulley system. The wires are pulled from one anchorage to the first tower, then to the next tower, and then to the anchorage on the other side. Thousands of steel wires are spun to build a bridge. 5. The deck. The flat part of the bridge with the road is constructed last. If the bridge is being built over water, the deck is brought in on boats, and one piece at a time, and raised by cranes to assemble the wood. 17 Arch Bridge, Shanghai, China. Arch bridges date back to ancient Greece. 4th Railway Bridge, Scotland. A cant lever is a beam that is supported at only one end. Cant lever bridges are good for spanning long distances. Causeway Bridge, Louisiana. Beam bridges are built across large bodies of water and can be some of the longest bridges in the world. How do high-speed trains work? Most trains today use electricity to move. High-speed trains levitate, float above the track with the help of super-powered magnets. They're called maglev trains for magnetic levitation. It never touches the track, so there is no friction to slow it down. Whether they hold a photo on the fridge or power a train, all magnets work the same way. One side or pole has electrons that are strongly attracted to the electrons in certain metals, while the other side's electrons repel them, push them away. Maglev trains are powered by superconducting magnets. When the train is running, like magnets are cooled to 450 degrees minus Fahrenheit. The extreme cold increases the power of the magnet, which is why they are called superconducting. Fast facts about high-speed trains. Number one, the first maglev train was built at Birmingham Airport in Britain in 1984 and closed in 1995. It had a comparatively low speed of 26 miles per hour. The Shanghai maglev can travel almost 20 miles in 8 minutes. The fastest commercial maglev train in the world is the Shanghai maglev. It opened in 2004, and its top speed is 268 miles per hour. An additional maglev train line is being built to connect the Japanese cities of Osaka and Tokyo. When the system is completed in 2037, what is now a three-hour trip will shrink to 1 hour. Number five, a maglev trains in Japan are nicknamed bullet trains, both because of their speed and their bullet-like shape that cuts down wind resistance. Number six, maglev trains are twice as fast as the fastest train in the United States. Number seven, today only three countries use maglev trains to carry passengers, China, Japan, and South Korea. Number eight, the Shinkansen railway network in Japan has 9 maglev train lines. Number nine, maglev systems have a hefty price tag. A proposed line from Baltimore to Washington, D.C. has a projected cost of $15 billion. And number 10, once a maglev line is built, it costs about 70% less to operate than traditional electric train lines. Superconducting magnets sit both underneath the train and on top of the track. The poles of these magnets are opposite, meaning they repel each other. That's what creates the levitation that raises the train. Superconducting magnets along the outside of the train and edge of the track have alternating poles. Some attract each other, pulling the train forward. Others repel each other. This adds a push force that makes the train go even faster. Page 70. How can the sea provide power? A turbine is a machine for generating power with wheels or rotors. When the turbine's wheels rotate, pushed by water, steam, or other means, electricity is generated. Tidal turbines are essentially underwater windmills, powered by water rather than air. Some already sit right off the east coast and use the power of constantly shifting tides to generate electricity. Others may one day be placed farther out to capture the power of deep ocean currents. How does wave power work? There are a number of technologies that can be used to convert the amazing power of waves into electricity. Attenuators, sometimes nicknamed sea snakes, are similar to buoys but lie flat on the surface of the ocean. Wave motion creates power that can be harnessed by these machines. You don't say. An electric car could travel for hundreds of miles on the power that's generated by just one ocean wave. How do ocean breezes help? Oceans are a source of large amounts of steady wind, which moves the blades, turning a rotor that is connected to a generator. This creates electricity. Offshore wind farms like this one off the coast of the United Kingdom are another way oceans can help create power. Absorbers use giant buoys that float on the ocean surface. The buoys are connected to generators on the ocean floor. Waves move the buoys up and down, creating energy. The generators turn that energy into electricity, which travels to land through undersea cables. Oscillating water columns use waves and air pressure to generate energy. The top part is filled with air and the bottom is full of water. As the waves move through, air pressure in the top section increases and decreases. This changing air pressure can be captured and turned into electricity. Now here's an interesting one. What is climate change? When you check the weather report, you want to know what the temperature is outside, whether you need a jacket or rain boots, and if it will warm up after school. That's your local weather, and it changes daily. Climate change is a long-term pattern of warming temperatures and increasingly extreme weather brought about in part by human activity. Even a small rise in temperature can have a big impact. Why does trash matter? A big portion of the stuff we throw away is made of plastic, which decomposes very slowly, if at all. The plastic straw in the soda cup may be sitting in a landfill 200 years after you throw it away. So what can be done to solve the problem with plastics? There are two new technologies called gasification and pyrolysis that may help by converting trash into energy. Gasification burns garbage at very high temperatures, turning it into a gas. Normally, when you burn plastic, the molecules bond with oxygen and become poisonous. But engineers figured out how to burn the plastic in an oxygen-free environment, so there's no poison. The resulting gas can be used to generate energy. The word pyrolysis comes from the Greek words meaning separating by fire. Plastic trash is shredded and melted rather than burned. The melting process breaks down the plastic into a form that can be turned into fuel. How can we get rid of carbon? Carbon emissions are a major cause of climate change. Plants consume carbon dioxide for air as they grow. One way to reduce carbon in the atmosphere is to grow more plants. This is called carbon capture. Plants require soil, water, and time. Three things in short supply. But plants that live in the ocean, such as algae and seaweed, are great for carbon capture. Algae don't need soil or fresh water, grow faster than trees, and consume more carbon. What are some new types of eco-friendly cars? One car isn't so bad. The problem is there are about 1.3 billion cars contributing to climate change. But more eco-friendly cars are possible. Number one, hybrid cars have a green fuel source, often electricity, as well as a traditional gasoline-burning engine. Number two, electric vehicles run on rechargeable batteries, not gasoline. Number three, biodiesel vehicles get their fuel from vegetable oil and animal fats, like the stuff French fries are cooked in. New vehicles, as well as traditional engines, can be adjusted to run on biodiesel. Number four, hydrogen-powered vehicles are exciting because hydrogen is cheap and plentiful. The only thing hydrogen vehicles leave behind is a little water. And five, other possible fuels include methanol, a kind of alcohol, a gas called dimethyl, ether, and even ammonia. Page 74. How are fireworks displays created? Celebrations around the globe often involve massive fireworks displays. These displays of pyrotechnic perfection used science for everything from mixing colors to controlling the speed of the launch and explosion to determining the display made in the night sky. And here's a picture. Shells are manufactured in factories. Each firework shell has a number of parts. 1, a lifting charge. 2, a time fuse. 3, a burst charge. 4, stars. And 5, fuse. What a shell looks like when it explodes is based on 2 factors. The types of chemicals inside the stars, which determine the firework's color, and the pattern in which the stars are arranged. Many stars are the size and shape of marbles, but they can also be larger spheres, little cubes, or other shapes. Each one will look different in the sky. What makes the colors? Fireworks have a variety of hues, thanks to the chemical compounds inside. When those chemicals are heated, they release light energy that we see as different colors. Aluminum gives off silver sparks. Barium shows up as green. Calcium comes out as orange. During a fireworks show, shells are fired out of metal tubes called mortars. The lifting charge sends the shells soaring into the air. The charge also lights the time fuse, which causes the explosion to happen at just the right moment. Several explosions go off, one after another. That effect is created by multi-break shells. These are extra little explosions that force shells to break apart in the air. Because the sections have separate time fuses, each one will explode at a slightly different moment, creating the cascade effect. Copper burns and turns out blue. Strontium produces red. Copper plus strontium equals purple. Magnesium looks white or silver. And sodium ends up yellow. And it shows some beautiful pictures on pages 74 and 75 of these remarkable works of the sky. We see here on page 74 that shows the marble size, shape of chemicals that are inside the stars, inside the fireworks. Here on page 75, pictures of what happens when they are shot up in the sky in the different varieties of colors. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.